My name is Melvin Shelton. I'm interviewing Mrs. Ida Wimsett, the 17th of August, 1973, in Bishop, Texas, in her home. Mrs. Wimsett, can you tell us something of your early travels into Bishop, when you first came to Bishop?
Yes, I came into Bishop on a train. I arrived here on Christmas Eve Day, 1912. And after the holidays, I went to school in the one-room building that had been erected on the original campus, original three-room school building and two other one-room. There were no seats far in the building. We had folding chairs that we brought from the theater building. And blew in a northern. And by noon it was almost freezing. All the children were sitting there just shivering without any fire. Finally, a man came and began to put a hole in the wall. Put a stove tied to it and began to sit. The school turned out before we got to it. So that was some shivering day, the first day I went to school.
And that was in what year?
That was January 1930. Because I got to December, Christmas 1930. And that was the second day of January 1930. The town in the farmland had already been good. The town was about 3 years old, I guess, nearly 3 years old. And the farmland had already been grubbed and plowed. And farmers could come through long rows of grain and cotton. Everybody worked and everybody was happy, it seemed. And we had a beautiful park for recreation. A portion of the land was for deer. And they were a center of attraction for everyone, especially the children. There was a beautiful lake with two boats. There was a building, an open building. It had a plank floor and a roof and built in the beaches. That was what they did. Nearby was another building with several small rooms for swimming and goods. Sometimes they'd have book contests to see who could go to the other end of the lake and back first. And then there were high divers who would climb up those steep steps, plunge into that water one after the other, half a dozen of them. The great crowds would gather there to see them. And sometimes we had old big celebrations, sort of barbecue. And then at Easter time, the children would always go to the concert of the Easter times, which was enjoyable. And then there was another building that was small, dancing, and everyone in the city, surrounding areas, farms, and everybody, who could play, as well as Mr. Bishop and instrument. And if you had your instrument, you could play too. And one night a week, they met there and played. And on a clear night, you could hear all of it, and very beautiful music. And everything went fine for a few years till the spring 1916. And there was a drought. And the lake dried riding. The wire fence began to rust in the deer. Just hold the car. One to one, every day he left until they were all gone. Then in August, the big hurricane came and destroyed all the rest of the bins at the park, all the bins, as well as blowing several resting homes off of the block. Things began to look busy, and people began to leave. And half of the houses in town. And in 1917, we started moving houses out of Michigan. Kingsville, Lawrence, and all the neighborhoods. And then the drought continued, and what little rain came with the hurricane and salt water, and it killed what little growth was growing, so it was growing. And it was just a bare prairie with a few houses and a few people. And it really looked good. But a few of us stayed on. And then in 1918, the farmers made a fair crop ranking. And in 1919, they made the largest bumper cotton crop I guess that was ever harvested in South Texas. Oh my. Every farm in the country bought a car. They sold all their stock, their cows and their chickens and everything, and didn't want to be bothered with them because they had a car and wanted to go places. So that went on for a few years, and then the depression began to creep. And it got worse than it. Finally, most of those people put their car in the garage and locked the door and got them some cows and chickens and started planting a garden and raising something to eat to live. And reached its height here, I think, the depression did in about 1910. The latter part of 32 and 33 began to kind of get better. And then the recycling plant was built out west of town, and people got jobs out there, and things began to get better. Then it wasn't long until the Alameda started into operation. And people started coming back to Bishop and building houses. And they are continuing today to come back and build houses in the town. It started out a small town with a few buildings that built up in the town. The houses, they moved them away, and the thing was better. And then it got flourishing, and they started coming back and building houses till the town was 3 times as large as it was at the beginning. So that's just kind of overall jumping here and yonder, but that's kind of the way the town was. Yeah. Started out, went up and down, up and down.
The lake at the park, apparently it was much larger than it now is. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. We had a beautiful park. A beautiful lake. It was, quite a bit larger. And the clearest, cleanest water. But I don't know, it seems like big rains from out west coming in, I guess, and rush dirty or something. It's filled up and it's good for the water and nothing to do with the all dry.
Was it located at its present?
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine a large lake there.
Well, it wasn't outstandingly large, but it was a pretty good sized lake. They're trying to rebuild it back, but what we had then is much better than what we had then. Presently, we might continue to make it better. but give us peace.
Your husband came here before you did.
Yes, about a year. He came in November 1911, and I was just in the latter part of December 1912. He came in with his uncle from Waxy Hatchet. I don't know the name of it.
That's fine. No, I'll be glad for you.
Well, he's Kentucky. My husband was. His parents called when he was just a teenager. And then he came out to Texas to live with his uncle. He must have you. And he heard about South Texas, as a lot of other people did. They thought it was this paradise, and the finest place in the world, so they wanted to come to South Texas. Of course, he come along with my uncle and helped run those big plows and break up the land. They lived in a tent a while out on the farm that he bought west of town, just 1 mile away from town, you know, section of land. And they lived in a tent that they could build a little house to live in. Chris, it was years later that I'm here.
Can you tell us something of your courtship or your dating? What did you
just,
do?
It was just a mere accident that we met. I don't know. There was a crowd of people, and it seemed like we were having something about some stuff. They love stuff. We were out in the country, and I don't know if it's a rodeo or what. And he was there. He was a great stockman. He loved stock. And of course, he was there. And he rode some of the horses. And I met him one day. I didn't think anything about it. He was just a little man. I guess he kind of eyed me, keep hanging around. I try to get away from him. I was kind of timid. But finally, I guess he won me over. We got started going together. I guess we went together for 2 years before we finally met.
And you married at what? 1970. Well, can you tell us something of your dating? Like, what did you do, or where did you go, places? Or?
Well, there were these many things to go to. Then, however, we had picture shows, and then tent shows would come to town, and all just like I say, they'd have the big celebrations with the park, they'd have an all day thing. Then there were ball games to go to, and just got all the other things.
These tent shows, what were they?
Well, it was much smaller than Barnum and Bailey, but something on their own. Funny little things, and all the show you. There was very few of them that had animals like one of the ladies. Every once in a while, one would come in. But of course, it was a treat for us if we didn't have anything else to go to, We thought that was something to have that kind of show to go to. I guess I've covered you. I don't know. It didn't seem like this very much for anything. I guess we just had our eyes on each other. We couldn't see anything else.
Do you recall your impressions of Mr. Bishop? Can you possibly tell us what he looked like?
Well, he was, I'd call kind of a stout man. He was not overly fat or anything like that. I call him kind of a good stout man. And a very pleasant. He was your cousin helped me just talk with anyone. I went to school with his oldest daughter. She's just as friendly. She won the book. Baby. She went to play with all of us. I don't know if you ever did see the two-story home that was right in front of the Bishop Hotel. The old Bishop Hotel still stands. Well, his home was a two-story building right across the street, sign. And I was in the home. Wow. They did feel something that was good. Go home and get to the park and be there for school. He was a very nice man to everyone. He was a friend to the poor as well as the wealthy. You can call anybody wealthy, some of them are just a little bit better livers than others, but he was very nice. Oh, he showed his dignity, though. He liked to make a thank you to somebody. But I was much of a seeing our public classes. We ran to visit on the mainland.
And his wife?
She was a very lovely lady. Nice as she could be. And they had another child born while they lived here. They had two girls. They had the one. And then the other little girl was born on the baby. I just think the girl was born. Yeah. And that was 1915, and that was 14. And I guess the early part of 14. And I can't remember just when he left Bishop. But seemed like he didn't stay here too long. Well, he was gone before the storm and all destruction. And that was in 1916. So he must have lived here sometime in 1916. I guess he thought he had done all he could do in this town, so he went off somewhere else to set up another town. I don't know whether or not he was in South West Texas somewhere, but I don't know if it was in Mississippi. Just what I can hear about it, because I don't know.
The home that they lived in, you said you were in it.
Yes, it was a two-story building. I think it was one bedroom downstairs, living room, dining room, large area, kitchen, and then it's cabin, and that's what it was. Most of the bedrooms were open. Oh, at that time, I thought it was really home. I didn't know much about it. Now, it's so much time for us. But it was pretty kind of well kept. It was, you'd call, I guess you'd say, the best house in town at that time. Because all the houses then were just frame houses. Now they're in the brick. But I guess this house would have been totally fine. Ornamental. Several other two-story buildings in town, but they just rushed straight up. These two stories run straight up, you know, nothing fancy at all about them. Here's Hamlin Manor. If you notice the Bishop Hotel, if you look at it, you know, it's kind of a little fancy work going on. His home did too. Yeah. Very nice at that time.
You say that it was well kept. Did Mrs. Bishop do the work entirely?
No, she had a servant maid. And of course they had yard grass and the short and she didn't do anything. She didn't do anything. She had a husband that poured plenty for her. And so she didn't do anything. Of course, I was kind of like people, beauty calling out. I had a thick sheet, people calling for some hair, but I don't think that was every day. I just heard this, but I obviously just fixed it once in a while for her. I'm sure she combed her hair every day, but the talk got out that she had somebody comb her hair, help her dress. Now, whether that was every day or special occasions, maybe. Anyway, you know, everyone would have their opinion about the bishop thing, and that's what was talked about. I don't know how true it was. But she was a sweet, kind, lovely lady, and she didn't act, you know, like she was bigger than you and didn't want to talk to you or anything like that. She was very nice and polite and glad for you to come. I've just been girl
The maid and others that worked for the bishops, were they Anglo, Mexican American, Negro?
I think it was white people. If you determined it. No, it was Latin. It was the yard work.
The Latin Americans in town, most of those lived across the river.
That's right. We had a little section on our little community. We built all the houses, all the houses, and all built just alike. Hmm. That's where they lived. That was different. You know, just alike. All painted the same color, kind of the same color. And we had to live in one day, but since then, we lived all the town.
Were there any problems that you recall, incidents or anything in the early days?
Well, no, not in the real early days. Way on up, I was in the 20s, why the Latins would try to get on the oh, some of the white people were bitter against the conditions. White people. There was one Latin man having a fine grocery store there in that distant part of town. And he bought a lot of Mexican down to the place to be very good. Now they thought he would do that. And he tore his building down and came and he was going to rebuild it. He thought he'd be close to the pipeline, called just across the highway, and that's where I did this place there. Oh, some of them got so angry about that, terrible. He didn't get to put it in. He had to take it back up there and rebuild it. They fought him for a while, keep him back over there. But,
that was in the 20s?
Yes, and that was along in the 20s. After time went on, probably some of these old timers that didn't like them, you know, lived away, some of them died. The young generation didn't seem to care, didn't put up any competition or something, or even live. So now we don't think anything about it. The first, you see, they had their school over there. First, they wouldn't let the Latin go here. And there was one pretty smart boy over there. He finished grade school. That's about as fast as he could, just for junior high. And this one boy, though, he graduated out of junior high, he wants to go to school. Well, rather than to let him go to school here, this school paid his transportation to go to school. The Latins were going to high school down there, but the superintendent here didn't like it. He ought to be. And like I say, he paid the boy's tuition for him to go to school. But it wasn't long. I just like kind of a wholesale mail by the Latin more than
and the Negro community?
Well, we didn't have any Negroes, but we did have a little community of Negroes over there too, and they had their school and little church and the Latin Catholic church. But the Negroes never came to God. Who the Latins that wanted a good job? I see, we kind of set them down, pushed them back, and we had to go on quite a while. Now we don't think anything about it. The well-dressed Mexicans, educated, Latins. We don't realize that they're Latins. We just, you know, they're in school, or in, well, most any place you go in, doctor's office, or anywhere, why, these Latin people, and we don't think anything about it because they're nice, clean, and willing to work. They come to school and educated themselves, and dress nice. Now we feel like, well, if the Latin out, there wouldn't be much left because they're more willing to work than the Anglos. The Anglos are getting lazy, if I had to say. In the school and here in yonder, you want to do something, oh, I'm too busy, I think. Then you ask, Latin, and they'll do it. They'll take off. And they're going to take us over too, because still, you know, we don't get busy and go to work. We live somewhere else in ourselves. Of course, that's here and there, because I say, live my own days, and I'm just living, move on to as long as I live. I'm interested in my daughter. She's been her home, she's been a little bishop. She was satisfied in her work. I came from up down the Waco, and the lady up there, sometimes I thought to go back to her. Everybody's strange to her. She doesn't want to leave this place because she knows people here. She said, I don't know anybody up there, I'll never see it. She thinks it'd be very dull to go back to the plane and live. So, of course, I have my roots here.
You recall the incident of the Latin man who wanted to build a store. Were there other incidents that maybe dealt with either the Negro or the Latins? Do you remember a story or, well, an incident that occurred, I'm not sure exactly when, but where the jail burned?
Oh, I guess so. I just lived a block from them. Woke me up in the night. There was a colored man in there, and he started hollering. Woke me up, heard a peculiar noise. It was a long scream, and then it would just start over, and it was a long scream again. And I woke my husband, I said, what is that? He listened, he said, I'll get up and go outside and see. He walked out on the porch, and back, he says, oh, there's a car. And he couldn't tell, there was a big hotel just on down about a block to the other side of that. And he first thought it was the hotel that was on top. He says, oh, there's a big fog. He says, I can't tell. It's at night and it's dark, you know. And he says, it must be the hotel. So I jumped up and put my robe on, down on the porch and stood there and I looked at the room. I says, oh, that's the jailhouse. And about that time we heard some noise. and they had a mass. We didn't know there was anyone in the jail. But here come some men and running in with axes, you know, and they start hammering on that door, and I guess they must have been supposedly. I sat down on the porch and they didn't say, "Oh, he's already dead." And they left. He had already suffocated. He was smoking. He was a doctor. He came to me and had some money for the patients. And his patients said that they knew that he had over 5 million. Because they had all paid up. You see, I paid so much. And so he had cash money in his pocket. So I believe that he was wrong. His doctor and bishop gave him something new. He saw all that money. He was surprised he said, "No, now I don't know. That's my opinion. I just thought he was serious."
Well, do you think, who was the sheriff or the constable?
Ben Davis.
Ben Davis.
I'm doing very well.
Was he the man? Is he the one that put him into jail?
Yeah, there was two of them. He and Jack Connish. Ben Davis and Jack Connish.
There were two counselors.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They locked him up. Of course, the Negroes were scared to even speak. They looked at him like a man. They said they knew he had some money on him. And of course, to this day,
were there some suspicions?
Well, no. Everybody just talked among themselves. And that was our opinion at home. We didn't talk it out to anyone else, and I guess everybody else had money. I might be just far off as about it, but that's the way it looked to me.
That maybe somebody was trying to get the money that he had?
Yes, we figured that the money was taken away from him and then in the lockup to get rid of it. Now that was my opinion on whether that I might be a mile off. And I wouldn't accuse them about it, but they knew Mr. Davis and Mr. Collins too, and different facts, I do know that both of the men actually do not seem to splurge and live a little higher than they have been. I heard of the men. Mr. Collins didn't even have a car. Not long ago, he didn't have a car. Really, pick up and ride around in the car. It didn't look good for me. Of course, we were young and nice people. We never know anything brought to light about it. But that happened. It was in the 20s.
Was there much anti-Negro or Mexican feeling in town, say during the First World War and during the 20s?
No, during the First World War, it seemed like everything was in the Germans. We had anti-Germans here, and we were fighting Germans. And all in mind, it was really not German people. They even Well, I think he was a preacher. lived out northeast of town, so they had a church out there. The community Germans lived out there in a church. And they had a baby about 3 days old. And one night, they said, we go in and come to the bathroom and come. And I called and talked to him. Well, he went on out there. And he said, can you get in? So he said, can you come? And I went down to the woods. That name all night out of the family. Got the car lifted on the bus. Well, he managed to get home. He lived, as they were afraid, but they sure would beat him up. And of course, he took it to court. And all they did was just take him into the fire. And once I left him, they passed it on the house and asked if he could donate to pay the fine for doing a worthy cause. They call it a worthy cause to work on people's children.
Where were they passing the hat? Where was there something that they were passing the hat?
Main Street. Yep. Right down on Main Street. My husband was there and he saw him passing the hat going down the hat. They asked him, what have they done? Why are they picking up money to pay their fines? My husband said, I'm calling me home. He said, I'm not about this to do. My husband liked the German people. He thought they were very nice people. Of course, he liked the others too, but he didn't have anything against them. But just because we were fighting the Germans, well, he didn't think the Germans here were at fault. He didn't think Michigan was true. But all I can remember, the Germans had to have rooms. And they almost stood out the door at night. Well, the chip clock came and started about that time. And they had a big public meeting just about a block. Charlotte Pastor in the house. They had it written all over the sidewalk in the town. Public meeting with chip clock. Again, in Charlotte Pastor. We ate the first kind of meeting. I kind of important to see if I'm seeing anything. He went out there and there was a steady stream of cars from Kingsville. It was about dark and there was one car running for the other all the way to Kingsville coming up to see that meeting. I didn't saw some people in the car. The plane was on the other side of the fence in the pasture and everybody else had stayed on this side. And he had the big burning cross and he had the hoods over. You can depending on what they say and talk to each other. But anyway, they had a public meeting in the Sherlock Pasture. It's right at the edge of the pasture. I didn't want to keep that to say.
Quite a few did.
Yeah! I tell you, they cut all shaken because the leading people of the town killed them. And my husband didn't like them, and he says, I don't intend to join them. And I was glad he looked at it that way. I wanted to join them because, well, the way we were told that if they told you to get with the crowd, you know, get with a few other men, and go get somebody and take him out in the pasture and thrash him, well, you had to do it. My husband says, I'm not going to do it. I'm not enjoying anything with I have to be people. Because they didn't bother us. We got along all right. We just kind of went along neutral. But
well, do you know who did join?
Probably all the leading people in the town. Jim Harrell, I think, is the main big old gobbler they call him. Whatever they called him, head man, maybe. I always heard him say he was the grand gobbler. And that was Jim Harrell. Now, I I guess you've heard about the Hickman House, haven't you? Some of them still live here in Egypt today, and supposed to be the leading people they were at that time. And he was the leader.
What was his occupation?
He lived here in town, but he was a farmer. Had a large family. One of his daughters, Lady Rice, came by. And he wanted his family to find a little job. And it made Mr. Harris so mad that he just blessed him out for everything. They came one Saturday afternoon. I was just going to spend the night. And he got talking about it because I'm the family that's blessed this thing on because he was young. So they got in their car and went back to Robstown. And it went for years that they didn't speak to each other. My husband was a woman, and they had a sick cat. Somehow had a sick cat. Mr. Harris himself wasn't there, but his son came over to get my husband to get up that time. They were out at the barn, and the person was talking, and looked up, and it was his mother and his sister from Robson. He said, "Oh, there comes my sister." He was so shocked and surprised, and they hadn't seen each other in 7 years, but she just happened to drive down or happened to be in Bishop and thought she was running fine. She knew that her father wasn't there. So she came back to see her mother. And she said, "Well, certainly my brothers is a large family. But anyway, this one boy was there. And his mother was there in the home by herself. This one boy." So they come out there and see her. But my husband said she was very restless. She talked and she just looked every direction. "Well, I guess I better go. I better go." I guess she was afraid somebody would come find me there. And I can tell you who she is. She's the county clerk of Mrs. Her husband was county clerk, and he died, and they gave it to her, and she is still county clerk. She has had that since way back in the 20s. Of course, Mr. and Mrs. Harold are both dead, and I don't know. I don't know anything about these people, but maybe it'll be so long we'll all be dead by the time somebody else reads it.
Do you know others who perhaps, what I'm interested in is, I think, what kind of people generally belong to the land? Like, were they businessmen?
Yes, businessmen, mostly businessmen. Now, there might have been a few farmers. But most of them were, well, of course, Mr. Harrell was a farmer himself. Well, Mr. Harrell was mayor of the city. He was mayor of the city at that time, and he thought he was just ruler. He was running things. Mr. R.R. Hall was our first mayor. But anyway, at this time, Mr. Harrell was mayor of Bishop. Yes, it was the leading people of the town that were members of the Ku Klux Klan. And it was kind of bad, I think. Didn't want to have anything to do. But like I said, we got along in the town. Both sides. And we had to say, we liked the German people. We didn't have anything against the other people. We just didn't like the Ku Klux Klan and ways of doing it.
You say the businessmen were mostly, or you think they were most of the membership in the Klan?
Yes, I think so. Like I say, it was the leading people in the town. Well, I guess half or two-thirds of the farmers were Germans. Anyway. Of course, the Germans were all bitter against them. And there might have been a few farmers, I'm sure there were, that were members of it, but one thing seemed like the town.
Do you recall any other incidents associated with the KKK? For example, I think there was perhaps an incident with a Negro who was hanged or something like that. Do you recall anything like that?
No, I don't know. Is that this year?
I'm not sure. I recall some mention of something like this, or perhaps it was something else, tar and feathered, or I'm not sure.
No, I don't remember.
So, do you then recall any kinds of activities that the KKK did? That is, did they just have meetings, or did they carry out some of these threats?
Well, outside of this picture, I don't know. They would boycott you. They wouldn't trade you, have anything to do with you. Now, it didn't affect my husband, because if the pupil had a sick animal, they would come for my husband. That's what I'm saying. He just was neutral, and they didn't seem to hold it against us. Now, there was one man talked to my husband, and my husband knew he was the biggest kicker for us in town, and he was talking to him. And he asked my husband, he said, what do you think about the kicker plan? He says, I don't know. And this man said, I've been asked to join, and he'd already been a member of my family. And he said, I didn't know anything about it. My husband says, well, I'm willing to join anything for the good. It's better. But he says, I don't know anything about the particular claim, and I have to find out more about it before I join. He was just feeling of my husband and see if he could get him to join. I know, that's what my husband said.
Who was
that? I think that was Mr. Ryan. Ford cars make the new car we can buy, and later, while other cars can make them, we can do that.
The cars that were sold here, were they taking over from horses?
Yes, that's what I say. The farmers sold the buggy animals and the cars and all the stuff.
What were the roads adequate to allow?
Well, when the cars came to Jesus, they started doing the roads were muddy for a while. Now, not all of them were fixed right away. There was a few of the streets that was paved. But I remember we had a rain. It had rained, it felt like it go down. It rained. And we just had old mud roads. And they just worked out two ruts. And if you wanted to go down that street, you'd have to look to see if there's anybody coming. There wasn't a way you'd get to those two ruts. Then you come to a paved street. And if there's somebody down there, he'd wait till you got there and got out so he could get in those two ruts and go where he wanted. That's kind of the way it was when the first cars first came to be. But they soon paid them. They could be paid them. It took time. And all of them. people named Hyman. That was road, but it was built up high and it was never another. You could always travel it.
And that was the highway from Driscoll?
Long to Driscoll. Still the same old highway, but it was close from the town and laid out.
Do you recall later a Mrs. Are the New Mooners and this?
Yes, we had New Mooners. I don't know too much about it. She was a Latin lady from Laredo, and she always, she and doctor with medicine, she just massaged. And she said she had a baby, a new moon. And she'd come to Bishop, suppose they were like 3 days. And a new moon. Oh, people had lots of confidence in her. They'd be sick and poor things. She'd rub them and they were well, and they just felt great. She'd be there doing my own, and I'd never be gold. I didn't take a treatment. So, there were a lot of people come though. There were people that even come from the Lorena to take people from
Mother Lane.
Yes, her name is Mother Lane. That's what everybody called her. She was her husband. Yeah. There was a lady living here in Bishop. Here, sometimes she was an awful good friend. Sometimes when she'd go back to the lady, this lady would go with her. And this woman was a Jew. We then, I believe it was one, they had a drug store. Now she was awful good friend of her. Miss Freelander is still living. She's in the home. You probably. Well, I she had light mind in the she probably did a lot of it. I just knew that she was a sergeant doctor. She was a Latin and she went over in Latin town. That's what I see. They had a building in I remember one day in the open in town, and she was going home. And very big pine car drove up from the street on the street. And I didn't know what was that. And it's not him. And this was Phil. And I thought, come and go up. Her son got in the car. It was Phil and her son. He was Lane. Mother Lane, so. So, Miss Freelander and her brother came and stole. And so he walked down the side. Well, I'm going to have the weekend for myself, says my sister. And Miss Lane stayed over the weekend at the lake. So, she must have been a wealthy lady. You know, anything like that. You don't say anything about it. I don't know anything about it. So she did. This was feeling was a good friend to she could have stood on the other to be confirmed. Not say she can take me a lot if she was able. And I don't know what condition she was in. She's been in.
You mentioned earlier something about when you were dating something, the church's activities. Can you tell us something about the early churches?
Well, now the First Baptist Church, they were building it when I came to Bishop. I went right by there to give them that. The Methodist Church was already completed.
circumstances that the Church of Christ didn't have a very large congregation, and they met upstairs. What's now Zelma Butts' filling station, that had an upstairs, and they needed upstairs there. So their services were even stars, even top of the religion. And they do have a church now. And then, I think it was around that 1918, they built the St. John's Lutheran Church, which was built on the west side. The west side of town used to be a pretty nice part of town, it was like this. It was supposed to be a beautiful church. Lots of nice homes and everything. And in fact, that's where I live. This is the Bishop's sister's home. He built it for her. And we bought it. We lived in there. I guess I'm doing all this stuff.
No,
it seemed like the Anglos begin to move away. Protestants begin to crowd in. So I said, I'm not going to live here. And my husband had already passed away. And so I told my brother, I said, let's go over on this side of town and see if we can find a home. So we come over here and we look around here and wander and everything. Go back home. Well, I didn't see a house over there, but I like as well as I did this one. So we let it down now. After a while, I didn't think I'd just heard move. She won't stay in the house. After a while, I said, well, let's go over there and buy us a lot and move the house. Okay, that's just fine. So we started looking for a lot. Oh, we looked one over here and over yonder and everywhere, and I thought we never could find a lot. Finally, we found these two lots here. They bought a building home and they've been transferred to Pinsby. So they sold the union building house to Pinsby. Now they wanted to put these on the market. So I said, well, let's find a lot. So we drove up and down the street, first time we'd see if they can lot of money, we'd inquire who owned it. So we went down to the tax office. Who owned those two lots up there? I said, well, Mr. Bluegrass. He says, and he wants to sell them too. He says, we're here the other day. I told him if anybody wanted to buy him, tell him. Oh, he said, where does he live? Give us his address. We put out with the kids. I just passed him through that same day. And told him we were interested in buying the lots, but we had to pay him a lot of price that time. But,
when last?
1955. We just kind of held off, like we didn't want to sell them just to get more money. I know that's where you go, you know. Well, he didn't know that he wanted to sell them. I mean, he cut us off from time to time. It didn't make any time. I would sell them for a certain price. I would take them as much. I says, I'll pay that price. And we just wrote him a check right there because I wanted those lots so we could move our house. And that was in October 1964 that we broke the lots. And then as soon as we came down, 1st of June, where I had a married in the house, and he got here. That was an idea. And we had to talk to the different people. We paid the water and the house wouldn't have money that was getting cut. They said, well, that's for the man out of Houston to come up to his lot. It cost us $600. I said, just take the roof off. Because if you don't take it off, you can take it add to it and remodel, change the style of the roof. So he said, well, we'll just take the roof off. And then we would go under the water. There we picked the roof off and then we checked the house up in the morning. Okay, we come back in the morning and we'll house up. And about 3 o'clock next morning it started raining. Oh, yes. Of course, it just came down to it. But we had gathered wagon sheets from different farmers and spread over. We put all the furniture in, you know, and spread those wagon sheets over. All of this, he liked it. She and I were just trying to save this, that, and other, you know. Oh, this is a good work, you know. We just all over the house. The one that points is a fish, then that puts the metal. Well, it started raining, and the men knew that it was muddy, you see, it was dirt there until it got out on the pavement. I said, oh, it'll get stuck in that house and sit there a week. We'd better get up and go. So they came pretty quick, you know, and hooked on to it and started moving the knees in the house and all the rain and everything. We didn't know they were out there, so here they were, moving the house, and we can live out the winters and trees and things and going by. So they were just taking us on down in the rain. Well, of course, by the time we got over there, it was quick rain. Of course, the sun came out, it's supposed to be. I don't know why we were coming again. And I guess we were over here for a month or 6 weeks before we got a roof on there. You know, we had to seed it on the blocks and all, and then add the other bushings and everything. This was a porch here, so we just took it off before we moved it. Closed us in for an entrance and then we come to the porch. And it took time to do all that, you know, before we could build it. And some days it would come up the biggest, blackest cloud. You think it's going to rain 5 inches. And it would just pass over and wouldn't rain anymore. It wouldn't rain. And it did that 3-4 times. And that was the only time it rained, was the night before we moved over. And everybody else said, we're the luckiest people in the world. So then my house in the rain 4 times. So I said, well, we were scared enough thinking it's going to rain. It was rain 4 times. But anyway, that was a tough summer on us. My daughter was chosen to go to the NEA convention in Chicago. She was to leave the latter part of June. When she heard that, we had planned the new house, and when she heard that she was to go to the convention, she came home and said, let's put off moving the house and next summer, and you go to Chicago. I said, no, I'm not going to do it. I said, I'm going to move the house. And we're going to move. So we got the house moved over, and it's kind of bugging. But it didn't, they had part of it, but not all of it, when she left. She went off and left me here by myself. Carpenter's there, putting the roof on, back part is all open. Well, of course, I had the door, you know, where we're getting on the water, and it's open, and so, anyway, I stayed here. Some of the neighbors said, don't need you stay in that house by yourself since you come over with my estate. I said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to stay here and protect what I have. I said, I wouldn't have anything if I leave. Anyway, I stayed here. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I stayed here and tucked it out. She's gone 10 days. I should have never. I've gotten off the subject. Of course, there's something else when I asked.
That's fine. You were talking about the house. So was this? This was Mr. Bishop's
sister's home. Uh-huh. He built it.
How did you buy it?
Well, you see, when the hard times come, pressure, everything like that, I haven't really bought the house for too long to remember. Been there about a year. I guess we bought it from no, we didn't buy it from 1919. But she had moved away. And it just medically in the house. But she had it up for sale. And she had this car in my bed. And she buys the home, we found out this one was for sale. So we looked at it, and I was leaving the house. It was a 9 and a half at that time. But anyway, we took a lot of it. F.C. Bishop was already gone, but he had a brother, E.A. Bishop, that lived on here in Bishop, and he died. And he had charge of it. He was collecting the money. So we talked to him, and all he was just so dead, because he said she had something. And I remember this first, she moved, and then she so they got bigger people. We just hardly get out of sight of my husband. He's got everything grown up, you know, for him to buy. So we went up and lived and enjoyed it over there. But of course, as time goes on, it's all the class and change. Rooms,
what about the recording of the bee? Things like this? What kind of government offices did you have, or what?
We had to go to Corpus. That was our county seat. Yeah. We lost everything.
What did Bishop have in the way of the? Now you said that they had two constables, mm-hmm, and a mayor. And was there a city council?
No. Mm-hmm. Down there, started. Just mayor and two constables.
Were there any city operations like other than the police?
No, I don't think so. It was just a little old town sitting out in the country, because every family had a cow, chickens. You wake up in the morning and you hear the chickens crowing all over the town, and people are sticking the cow, the little patch of grass over there, they tie rope around the cow and stick out of that so she could eat the grass. Everyone in town had a cow. We did too. And that's what I say, it was just being alone.
What about the fires?
We had several fires. There were two houses right east of the Methodist Church. One not far, and of course we had a very poor fire department. Well, the men were all right, they did their job, and we didn't have outdoors and big holes, you know, just on the water. And the two houses were so close together, and they fall and try to save their house. It's so fast.
When was it?
That was one thing I had to honor. I don't know. It was long in there. I don't know if the houses were vacant. The house has not been vacant. It was lonely there when the town was dull, you know, not very many people lived there. So I did. In the late teens, I was, you know, after the hurricane storm and the drought. You know.
Town, you say, had, oh, I was going to ask about doctors. Your husband was a veterinarian. Did he ever do any doctoring on people?
No.
But the town did have a doctor.
They had, yeah, we had two doctors. Two doctors and two other doctors. One of the doctors was the Dr. Sturgis. My husband had a really good thing in the country. He came into town. That is fantastic. Just first beginning of coming to exist with people. Also, there's cancer. What's that? You know, I never heard of it. And this man had a cancer He came to see my husband. I don't want to brag, but I do think my husband was a good friend. He Peter 7 and he came in to see my husband and he says, can you cure this cancer? My husband said, if you were a mule, I could cure it. But I'm not going to have anything to do with yours because I don't know. I'm Dr. Human because I'm not going to put something in my name. Medical thing, but any time an animal had a wart, and why the medical officer, I don't know if the same medicine would have worked in humans or not. But anyway, my husband was a doctor. But he was a real good friend. Maybe he could do something. He was asked that one time, the doctor, a human, but of course he couldn't have that.
Did people go to Kingsville for a hospital courses?
Yes, if they got very sick, most people stayed at home, doctors come to the home, that didn't come to the office. But if you had to have an operation, which was very ill, you could go to Kingsville Hospital. And you were going to Corpus Hospitals in the Ridge. Later years,
the how important was the railroad to things?
Oh, they had 4,000 trains. You go north and you go south each day. And of course, not that kind of thing. And vegetables and fruit and the valley. Yes, we were working trains, and every time we went in, we were on good Corpus in the early days, so we didn't have a train. We'd have to go to Robstown and change. And then Mr. train that just run back and forth from Robstown to Corpus, because Corpus, you know, was often running in the road. This time, none of them, that was in Houston. And if we were on good Corpus, we'd have to go to Robstown and change, and then it's good, and go on Corpus. Come back. See, we didn't have any cars, too far to walk or to have a horse pull you in with them back. Maybe it was too much for me. So, oh, my husband and I would train across the island.
Why would you go?
Oh, just because I go. I did. I don't know. Shopping. Yeah, we would shop when we were over. Just sightseeing, down on the ocean, you know, look at the waves and all of that. I don't know, we just always biased to go over there. Lots of times we'd go one day and wait for the next day to come back, spend the night over there. Because you didn't have too long to stay, you know, if you come back to catch the evening. The morning train that comes through here about 9 o'clock, I think, well, it was between 10 and 11 o'clock the time we got into Corpus. And then we had to leave out because the evening train going south coming to Bishop around 6, we said we had to leave out of Corpus by 4:30. Well, that didn't give us too much time. Mm-hmm. So we would go prepared to spend the night. And my husband had I remember we were in the room for 3 days. I think we had a sale. Now, we won the state. I don't know, but anyway, we had a sale. And there's lots of things that we had. I remember we were in 3 days.
The train office was the only location out of the telegraph, wasn't it?
Yes. No, that's not. And I guess we know the original people who knew that part. Because original depot that was built there when I came to the and then here that long time, train from stopped.
What about telephones?
We speak on telephones. Because we've got a telephone for you.
When you were a little girl, there were no phones, is that correct?
Well, I don't know. They don't seem to me like there were always phones. I can't recall it.
Do you know who took care of it and how it was operating?
No, I mean, there isn't. Telephones, and they had the operators were upstairs. They were in some line that you didn't know. And that's where you go to pay your bills, and that's where the operators.
Downtown on Saturday, Friday or Saturday, I suppose, downtown is busy with a lot of people paying bills.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was a little town, and we thought it was something to go to town.
What kind of business activity was there?
Oh, yeah. That's nice. Purchase to get anybody to do a little something to go and crowd with. Guys was like a clown and hand out balloons to children, you know, while they would do that. Draw a crowd around the room and just little kind of sing. Oh, yeah. Very little common thing, but then time for people. I don't know if somebody wants to play.
A lot of people came into town.
Yes, always. Some. All kinds. You won't see anybody. Just, well, wait till Saturday. He'll be in town. I'll see him Saturday in town. Everybody come down Saturday. Well, I just get coming in with a supply of groceries. They didn't run to the store every day after dinner. They'd buy a week's supply. And they had to put it in there. That's the money. Chickens and meats. I just couldn't wait for chickens. That was the time they needed to eat. They had to wait for chickens. On the weekend, we had roast for Sunday dinner. You know, that was about it. For the next Sunday or some special occasion.
Do you remember anything about any of the businesses in downtown that were staying there?
No, we had a bakery one time. We served meals.
Was it like a restaurant? Or
no.
Was this during the Depression?
Well, it closed up before the Depression. It was before the Depression. No, it was a bakery. He had a bakery. He baked bread. Everybody in town bought bread from this bakery. Bread and pies and rolls and all kinds of stuff. He was always going there and buying something from the bakery. And then finally they put the lunch room in. They put it in a dining room and started serving meals. And they were good at it for a while. A lot of people eat. Some people just go eat out, you know. Well, I don't know if you call it a restaurant or what, but he just served me and then baked it.
Was there any other place that you might go eat out in Bishop?
At the drugstore. No, you could get the cold drinks. I don't know. Food. And people always came into the drugstore.
Well, this was in the early 20s.
20s.
Yes, that was in the early days.
Do you think that there was a problem with the segregation that, you know, you said the Mexican and the Negroes lived mostly on the other side of town? Was there any problem associated with that, for instance, like with the churches? I understand that, is there a graveyard, separate graveyard?
Mm-hmm.
There used to be the original graveyard for the pike, which now left. There were two white people, you know, who would expect that. When somebody died, well, they had to put a fox in it. And a few white people were buried over there. And then later we put this out of it. We've seen this from the other side. Everyone who had relics is weird, I think, but they're not wrong with you. You do that. Or the white people, the original.
And it still is that?
Mm-hmm, it's still.
When?
And that was in the 20s.
Oh, that long?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was in the long in the early 20s. That they set aside this travel land. Well, you see, from these more, what should I say, wealthy people, like the mayor's grandson, son of the man's wife died. Well, this was his home. He wanted to be buried here, but he didn't want to put her out there. So that's how come the mayor, Marshall Price, put seven here. And he said, well, nobody else didn't get to say. Well, maybe the first one was gone, just arguing somebody, and nobody knew him. They just moved in here, you know, and child died or something like that. Okay, well, let's place out there, but not here. That's what it was at first, you see. But when more prominent people begin to die, well, they know the last prominent people are buried. See, in this it's a new place now, we're agreeing on it all the time. But, because I'm proud of it, because the next one I think is good. I suppose that's why I'm good. You know, like that, It does happen in life, doesn't it?
Do you recall any, speaking of cemeteries and so on, do you recall any, I suppose you would call them ghost stories, or do you know of any? Any stories, strange, let's say, strange kind of stories that you've heard about Bishop and Sarah?
Well, no. Here is a little incident. There was a lady, her husband died and was buried out there. And she, and Rose would go out to the cemetery. And she went out there one day and she said that somebody else had been buried there. Well, she reported, I didn't want to do anything about it, and so she just kept that thing, said, I noticed somebody, there's a new grave out there. So they said, well, let's go out and investigate. And somebody living out east of town said they were coming into town and there's lights out there in the cemetery. And some people turned around there, but he just passed by and saw them, and he didn't realize what they were doing. But it was a Latin family's baby that died, and they carried it in the night out there and buried it on this poor lady's lot at the time of the question. Because they dressed the baby up. They went and asked the people, and they said, yeah, said the baby died, and they didn't know anybody or anything else, and they just, I guess they used some friends with them. And took it out there and buried it instead of anything else.
And then it was later dug up and.
Yes, they dug it out. And,
Who dug it?
Well, I don't know who dug it up, but then I guess they they were told they'd have to be built, right. I guess some of them Latin things, some of them were built. Now then, not too long ago, let's see, this is just being labeled. A Stanford boy, he was just a young boy, he was smart too. I went back from the school, just ready to. And I don't know how it was a letter, and he was sick for a long time. Nobody cared him for special life. But he went ahead and died. Everybody thought lots of the boy. It was very smart. And he died, and they brought him back to Bishop because this was with him. Brought him back to Bishop. Well, it was kind of like a good thing. It would have been lame or lame or lame. But they had the funeral one day. And the next morning, the mother and father, and he had a sister, went out. Naturally, I did the same thing. We would go out the next day to look at the grave. They went out the next morning, and his casket was floating up on the water, sinking on the floor. And the dirt, of course, was loose, and it was pushed the dirt away, and his casket was sitting up on the water. And there was nobody, just a family. They, of course, come right back to town. Those of you and others didn't know. The undertaker who came. Went home and kept an eye on his silly food till it dried up before he could do it. Now that happened, that hasn't been 10 years ago. That happened. But I don't remember any ghosts.
When you were younger, do you remember, well, not necessarily about the cemetery, but any kind of stories that were told to you that perhaps frightened you or you thought were very strange, unusual happenings around Bishop?
Well, we were just all a very quiet group of people and just happy and I don't seem to remember anything so exciting and family. I thought back where I came from, there were more exciting things like that happened than ever happened here. You know, you came here, it's just a certain routine of life, and you just live that way here. I never did think there was as much going on here. I don't seem to recall that much.
Well, what about the special remedies or things like this that people might have used for medicine?
Well,
were there any?
Right after the First World War, why, we all had flu. Everybody had the flu and worked the poor doctors to death. See, like they didn't know what to do. Anyway, you'd go for a doctor and be half a day nearly, it was longer than that before you could get him because he was so busy. Everybody was sick with the flu, you know. And I know there was a piece coming out in the paper. I see it was a certain time, ventilator, Mutton's Tower, they named several different things. Mexico, all those kind of useful parts, melt it, you know. And he said, and give your ribs a grease. We thought that was so clear. But he said, take that concoction and give your ribs a grease and it'll cure the flu. Now that's what they told. I don't know who all used it. But there might have been something in it because, you know, I know way back in my grandmother's time, they used lots of home remedies. Down in the country and long ways down and go to doctors and everybody got sick, they get the doctor and the sand. I hear something too about know about that place. I don't know if my daughter told you, and I don't know if I should tell you or not. I don't want to brag, but my daughter has never missed a day of school. She started school in the first grade. She graduated. She got an A in college, got a degree. She didn't miss a thing.